All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, June 8th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis, you sound really excited that it's June 8th, dude.
Well, I'm really excited because I spent most of the morning wrestling with our system trying to figure out why I wanted to just spit out June 9th projections. So now I'm fully in tune that it's June 8th. So if you're looking, Charlie Morton's going to be a great play tomorrow, according to our system, if you're looking to get a head start.
Because I thought you were going to say wrestling your sister, by the way. That would be a good match.
It's just fun when, like, I'm sure it was user error, but it's just fun when the computer just wants to just insist that it's a day ahead. This makes me think that when I get worried that, like, AI is going to fully take over and they're going to, I think AI is just going to start by gaslighting people and just making it's like, oh, no.
Today yeah, just messing around a little bit.
just fooling around. Like, so, like, getting,
actually, you want to hear a really creepy thing? When my oldest son woke up this morning, he had his soccer uniform on and he was like, My soccer game's at 10:30, right? I was like, no, today's not Saturday. So he thought it was Saturday. First time he's ever gotten the date wrong in his entire life, by the way. You know him. He's like super detail-oriented. And our system gets the date wrong somehow. And nobody knows exactly who put the date in. So maybe secretly it is a little bit of June 9th right now.
Maybe he's just like, and maybe he's just like fully connected, like through a stack. Like I've been watching Altered Carbon. Maybe he's just like fully stacked into like some kind of program that is hooked into the SQL database that runs. That would make sense. If I was going to hook myself into any one system, it would definitely be the data
that can predict the future.
It would definitely just be the ETL that runs our baseball projections. All right, so it is June 8th and it is Friday. We're going to talk baseball going on here. I also have a nice little. I started messing around with PGA these last couple weeks just because I don't know. I was like, I figured out a way that we can do some projections on them. So we're sort of beta testing this for the rest of the year, see how it goes, and then. I don't really even know that much about golf, so good sales pitch going here, dfsr.com/MLB. We'll get you signed up for our projections system, but this is why it's going to be like the worst thing that ever happened to me that's starting to follow golf because now there's like one or two lineups and one of them just sitting in first of like the $7 FanDuel PGA $15,000 top prize going into Friday, which I know it's like the end of the first quarter of a football game, but now I'm just going to have to stare at these PGA scores for the rest of the weekend, so that's effectively just going to ruin the rest of my time. And it was nice to know that the PGA thing seems to be working out to start. All right. I was going to say football, but I meant to say baseball. Baseball pod going today. Man, there are a ton of good pitchers going. I was just trying to just get a short list, and I think we could probably make one guy above the rest. But of the guys that fall into the stud, elite, true ace kind of guys, I would put probably at least three or four of them. And then the next level guys, there's probably, I don't know, six more guys. There's a lot of very good pitchers. Sale, Strasburg, Verlander, DeGrom, Tanaka, Bauer, Walker Buehler, I'll kind of throw in there. Vince Velasquez at times has done things. Greinke's pitching today. There are a lot of very good arms for a full Friday in baseball. Where do we start? I mean, is Sale, even with all these names, all these arms, how good all these guys are, and some of them having really actually truly exceptional seasons, do you think that Sale still stands just head and shoulders above the rest? He's the most expensive of the group. I take that back. He's not the most expensive. Verlander's actually 1,300 more on DraftKings. Actually, geez, Trevor Bauer's 700 more than Sale. Our projection.
Yeah, so what's going on with Sale? And this is like an important point to bring up because people were already complaining about this in our chat room, even through the dead of the night when most normal people are sleeping, because Sale was showing up preliminarily in our system. Is that Sale's price is depressed right now on the back of two bad starts against two really good offenses. So he went up against Atlanta, gave up six runs in 4 1/3, and they gave up 4 runs at Houston through 6 innings. And that has some people off of him, I think, a little bit. And it also has this price decrease. And so what all that does for our purposes, like we're not moving the needle on Sale whatsoever. I mean, especially like in the Atlanta game, the guy struck out 8 batters in 4 1/3. So it's not like he's broken or anything like that. It's just this happens sometimes. Baseball, Major League Baseball hitters are really good, and even the best pitchers don't get them all out every single time. So, so Sale, you're getting him at a slight discount right now relative to his true talent. He should easily be the most expensive pitcher on the slate. Since he's not, the system's just going to look and be like, I don't know what you want me to do here. Like going up against the White Sox, he's already the most talented guy going. Just play the guy. I think it's pretty straightforward, and I think attempts to go in a different direction are really overthinking things, particularly because the White Sox, not only are they a bottom five team in terms of WOBA against left-handed pitching, they strike out the very most. So you combine arguably the league's best strikeout pitcher with the team that strikes out the most against lefties, it's really hard to picture this not being a huge start for him.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see, I hate to say this and hate to like sound didactic about this, but like you'll just see smart money getting in on sale here because the price is a joke. Oh, yeah. Even in that time, even in those two bad starts, 14 Ks in 10 innings is just these are crazy numbers, man. Like I don't know what to like really what to tell people. He ran terrible in the Atlanta game on keeping guys on base. So it was basically everyone that got on base scored. He only had he allowed six base runs. I take that back. He allowed eight base runners and six of them scored. How often do you think this is going to happen? It's for him, never, right? Like I just don't like a left on base percentage of 30% is just not something that really is ever going to happen again for him. And the next game, 54% because he allowed seven base runners and four of them scored. This is. You can allow base runners, and everyone does, and you can allow home runs and whatever. And when you have just these kind of numbers, the times where you get to buy him at a discount because of recent run bad,
that you will get just two in a row, man, because they don't move the price oftentimes on one. But the fact that we got two in a row means it's a buyer's market.
The DraftKings price is a joke with the money line and everything going for him. So I think that's pretty easy. It is always a little easier when because honestly he'd be our top pitcher if he was the same price as Verlander at 12-4. So if you want to even look at it that way, like you just get this massive discount. Now we do have other guys here because there's probably going to be some case to roster up at least on DraftKings two very expensive starting pitchers just because there's so many guys that are good just kind of taking the mound today. I mentioned, any guy that we include here can probably just be a figure we can include them as GPP pivots on FanDuel as well because they're all sort of priced in the same area. And when you can only start one pitcher on FanDuel, all these guys have upside. The guys I think we're going to mention next all have the upside to just be the best pitcher on a given night simply because their talent level is there. So after him, on DraftKings, I mentioned Verlander's 1,300 more. He gets a Texas team that's been pretty good. Bauer is 11-8. Bauer's been excellent this season. I mean, are these guys, in terms of pairing them with Sale, are they too expensive to do it, do you think? Or are you looking at these guys or maybe someone else further down the chain? Because there's a lot of decisions to make here with pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you need to go too much further down the chain, but I would go slightly less expensive, and I'd take Steven Strasburg. I mean, Strasburg, he might not have the exact numbers of a guy like Verlander, let's say, but this season he's striking out more guys per nine than he was last year. He's walking fewer guys. The home runs are up, but that looks like it's based on an unsustainable home run to fly ball ratio, and by and large, this guy's just the same absolute monster that he's been in the past and also pretty darn cheap. So I think you can actually, given the discounts on sale, and Strasburg at 10-8, I think also arguably a discount too. I think you can actually pair both of those guys and still make room for some pretty good bats. So, that's like as of right now, that's where I would be leaning.
Yeah, 25% K rate for the Giants against righty pitching this year, and their lineup has been pretty static since the beginning of the season. A couple changes at the top, like their leadoff hitter, like they've started Gorkas at times. Now it's Panic, and I'm trying to Austin Jackson hit leadoff for a little bit. But for the most part, the middle of their lineup is essentially the same, and they're just old and significantly worse in their splits against righty pitching. Like McCutchen, Posey, Longoria, Pence, all these guys. I mean, Sandoval stinks kind of all around, but all these guys have been much worse for their careers and are getting against righties and are just all on the wrong side of the age regression line going forward. I think that, the Giants try to go a little bit all in here with some of these guys. It is not going to work out. I don't really know why they thought it was going to work out with some of these guys. Anyway, long story short, he's another big money line guy as well, minus 200 opening line. I don't have a case against Strasburg at all. I do want to go back and mention Trevor Bauer here real quick because he's expensive, but what do you make of Bauer? His numbers this year. So he's averaging 6.5 innings per start. That's awesome.
Pretty good.
You're not going to find many pitchers better than that. He's averaging more than 11 Ks per nine, which is a strikeout plus more than his best season, which was last year. So he's going the right direction in terms of strikeouts. He was about a strikeout per nine guy. Then he went up to 10 strikeouts per nine, and now he's up over 11. The xFIP is 3.2. Is he like starting to enter the discussion of these other names? Because I kind of wanted to put him in like, you have Verlander, you have Sale, and then the tier down, you have Bauer. But like, I don't know if Bauer now just should be in that same group of guys, or do we just not have a long enough sample size or large enough sample size to kind of slot him in with the very best in the game?
Well, I think it's a mix of both, actually. So I think on one hand, you don't want to slot him in right alongside the very best guys in the game. I think the walk rate pretty much prevents that, right? Like a 3-2 walk rate is just a lot higher than you're going to see from the truly elite guys like Sale or Strasburg or, even Verlander right now. And that is going to be debilitating. That will lead to some starts where he simply can't go out there and make it very deep into games. It's kind of interesting, actually, because last year he wasn't able to average 6 innings per start, largely on the back of the fact that he runs a lot of deep counts with the increased K rate and the increased walk rate. For whatever reason, this season, that hasn't punished him quite as much. Now, part of that is going to be that his BABIP is back down to normal levels. It's kind of funny because if you actually draw a line through the 2016, 2017, and 2018 seasons just via XFIP, and even 2015, you actually just see a pitcher who's steadily improving, which makes sense because he's only 27 years old. I think it's kind of easy to forget that this guy came up really, really young. But yeah, so through the last four seasons, the XFIP's gone 4.28, 4.13, 3.6 to this year, 3.29. So that just seems like normal progression to me. You know, a young pitcher kind of figuring out how to get out of jams and, you know, not running terrible in terms of BABIP last year. I think it's pretty much legit. The only thing that looks a little bit run hot to me is the home run to fly ball rate. 7.2% is probably not where he's going to land, given that every other season, basically, throughout his career, he's settled in around 11 or 12%. When that comes back in, I think you see the ERA creeping into the low threes, but that still makes him a pretty damn good pitcher. So I don't think you want to pay more for him than you do for Sale on DraftKings or anything that. But yeah, I think you can still do some pretty decent work by slotting him in there, especially for big tournaments, because on a night like tonight, nobody's going to play this guy.
Yeah, he's throwing the hardest he's ever thrown in his career, the fastball, and he's throwing a slider more than he's ever thrown in his career. Anyway, I'm impressed when I see guys make these huge, I would say huge leaps. After him, I mentioned some other guys. I don't know if any of these guys stand out to you more than the rest. I mean, we have guys like DeGrom, Tanaka, Walker Buehler, Greinke is sitting out there. I don't know if we can deep dive on each one of them, but you know, Tanaka against the Mets, does that entice you at all? I mean, DeGrom going the other way against a very strikeout-happy Yankees team, like, do you see upside there? Any of these guys stand out to you?
I don't think I'm going to touch DeGrom. I mean, I can see a case for it in that, like I mentioned, potential low ownership on Bauer. Nobody is going to play DeGrom against the Yankees, I wouldn't think, given all these other options, just because you're going to put him against some of the other numbers. And what you say is true, though. Like, you know, when things are going well for a right-handed pitcher against the Yankees, you can generate a lot of strikeouts or get out of big innings. The problem is you can give up a lot of big innings, too. So definitely not a place I'm going to land for cash game purposes. But yeah, for big tournaments, I think all the names you mentioned, Walker Buehler, I think he might wind up having too high ownership based on his innings pitch per start and kind of the just the fact that he's young and it's going to be difficult for him to be as good as some of these guys on a true talent level right now. But yeah, I think up and down, those are all pretty good options. And I think you mentioned earlier Vincent Velasquez, but he's another one. I mean, his numbers are almost identical to Bauer's right now. 11 Ks per nine, 3.1 walks per nine. So, you know, in another, a guy who's probably getting less fanfare, but potentially just as much upside, I think he's an interesting one too.
Yeah, it's always hard with these, like, I'm speaking about Bauer specifically, but it's always hard with some of these young pitchers. One, he pitches for the Dodgers, so you're always going to be concerned about Dave Roberts just kind of pulling him after, you know, 85 pitches because something happened or whatever. But and then also just to know, you know, what the true talent is going to be. The true talent minor league stuff was like 11 Ks per nine. He's translated it pretty damn well to the majors. He's just under 10 Ks per nine, and you would have to assume that as he gets more comfortable, it'd be hard to say he's just going to be a 10 strikeout per nine guy for his career, but he is a real prospect. He has one of the lower implied run lines against of all the guys we mentioned, mostly because some of these other guys do fall into a little bit of a problem of park tonight. So, well, Citi Field is not a great park, but the Yankees Mets game, that actually has a pretty low run line. But Dodger Stadium is one of the best pitcher's parks in baseball. And I don't know, at minus 180, I think the Atlanta's coming in at somewhere around, I don't know, like low threes. And they've been, I know their offense has been very good at times, especially against righty pitching. But without Acuna in the lineup, the bottom of that lineup still strikes me as not something I really over want to worry about. And one thing I also didn't mention here is we have so many expensive pitchers going today. I just kind of overlooked that we just also have a game in Coors. And so we're going to be in a weird spot where the game in Coors has sort of, again, by far the highest run line. It's 11, and no other game is at 10, and it's actually pretty even money along both sides of it. So the fact that we're going to have to spend up so much for pitching, probably, because it seems almost impossible to think about just fading all the guys just mentioned, and knowing that you probably have to start at least one of them, probably two of them. Does that make you, like a guy like Tanaka, specifically on DraftKings, like a guy like Tanaka and Buehler are below 10,000, and Velasquez is right around 8,000. Does that incentivize you more to maybe consider them simply because it'll allow just that little bit more flexibility with the bats? Or is this a night where you feel comfortable maybe fading cores more than normal and just rostering up some of the more consistent guys that we mentioned at the top of the podcast?
Yeah, so I think that this is a kind of a multi-part question here. First of all, yeah, I think it's a little rough in general to go cheap on pitching on a night where there's so many expensive options, but only because there are no really good cheap options. Like sometimes there just are, right? I don't think you want to bend over. Typically, I think it's incorrect for cash game purposes to bend over backwards to get cheap pitching in there, just to try and, you know, nurse a little bit more upside from the bats. Like, I don't think that's a sound long-term winning strategy. It's doable when you have like a Joe Musgrove for 4,000 or whatever, but on a night like tonight, I don't see any options like that really springing to the surface. I also think that in some ways, getting Sale at these prices is akin to getting a Coors bat for too cheap, right? It's like normally you'd have to pay, what, 13,000 for him or something like that in a good spot against the White Sox. Right now you're getting him for very, very cheap. So getting five extra points from him is the same as getting five extra points from a hitter. So I don't really see the need to go too deep on that. The other interesting, perhaps telling thing is even when, like, what we had Wilmer Font's projection was too high earlier, even when the top lineup was Sale and Wilmer Font, you're really only getting two Coors guys anyway. So the system is saying that there's not that many options to spend up to where you would want to prioritize it to go cheap on pitching, I don't think.
It probably does help too. You know, I mentioned they have the highest run line, but it helps that I'm going to try to word this correctly. It helps that Greinke is pitching in Coors tonight because while you still get the highest run line, the fact that Greinke is just a very good arm makes it so that I'm less incentivized to at least play half of that game, which would be which would obviously be the rocky side of it, right? Because while Greinke can get blown up just like anyone can get blown up in Coors, it's just less likely to happen for a guy who actually has strikeout stuff, who's able to limit the walks. You know, maybe staying in the zone causes him problems, but I wouldn't be surprised right now. Like I said, the money is coming in even on both sides of that game. I wouldn't be surprised to see it just float a little bit more on the Diamondbacks. And it doesn't mean they're going to get more implied runs, just because it would just mean the over-under might come down a little bit as we shave partial runs off of the Colorado Rockies side. I'm mostly guessing at that, but I am a little surprised at the line, just because it does strike me as Greinke being significantly better than Marquez. Anyone else we missed here in terms of pitching? I know we went through a lot of guys.
Well, one game I just want to draw your attention to this, because I actually don't think these guys are viable. And if we were a sports betting podcast, you know, in the places where it's illegal, I would be looking really hard at just betting in the over on this Kansas City-Oakland game.
I knew you were going to say that. You know, it's crazy, because I actually, right when you said I draw your attention, I scrolled through real quick to see if that's something that stood out, and I'm completely with you. But walk through why this one maybe raised an eyebrow for you as well.
Well, I mean, at a total of 7.5 and basically a pick 'em, like, normally you'll see this, like, lines this low, especially in American League games, when you have like two really, really good pitchers going, not two complete bums. And maybe you look at the ERAs and you're not seeing what I'm seeing. But like, for instance, the Milwaukee-Philadelphia game has Yulis Chacin and Vince Velasquez going. That game has an 8 total, so just a half a run more, but two good pitchers. And I'm just not seeing it with Montas and Jacob Junis. Like, Montas, yeah, I guess he has had some strikeout stuff in the minors, but through two starts in the majors so far, he's gone 14 innings with fewer than 6 Ks per 9. The ERA has been down, but it just looks like a complete paper tiger to me, and just a guy who's probably not ready. So maybe this stuff is there and we just haven't seen it quite yet. He hasn't flashed it in two brief stops in the majors so far, keeps getting kicked back down to the minors. I've just taken the over, you know? The guy went 41 innings in AAA this year with a 7K per 9. Like, I just don't get it. So I think this game, regardless of whatever the Vegas line is, I'm taking the over, and I think that game is sneakily stackable.
Junis isn't a bum, and I still agree with you. Like, it's way too low to just for an American League game. I get that, like, the A's lineup, especially down near the bottom, has some issues against righties, specifically against righties, and Junis is like an average pitcher, maybe slightly above 8.
Yeah, he's not a bum, but he's not a bum either. Like, he's got a 4-1 xFIP. He's just totally average, right? It's like,
yeah. So yeah, I'm with you that if we were to see a game, run line probably climb up a little bit. Like, Montas is not a guy I'm interested in playing here at all. I don't even know what his price is. I'll look it up real quick. And I still short of him being like 4,000. He's 8,000 on DraftKings, so see ya. There's absolutely no point in doing it. And I was wondering, I was like, oh, I wonder if we would have a good projection on him. But then I realized he's just so far down the points per dollar chain. That's why he just never even came into light. All right, hit us up with a sponsor, and then we can talk about some more of the bats.
Good time. So let's talk about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime is a great place to go to play one-on-one daily fantasy sports challenges, where you can just pick one player that you believe in tonight and one player you don't believe in. So maybe you pick against Frankie Montas and all the Frankie Montas love that's out there, and you there's can cash in. Oh, there's got to be a lot of it out there. Got all those Oakland fans, those rich Oakland fans. You should juice them. Anyways, yeah, so noahalftime.com. Check them out. It's really just a nice way to play if you don't feel like putting in all the time that it takes to make craft a perfect lineup for FanDuel and DraftKings. So, yep, check them out. Download the app. Use promo code DFSR for a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit.
All right, we mentioned a bunch of these pitchers. I mean, we are in a situation here. There are so many good pitchers, and there's even just average ones that we didn't even mention, really. And I think you're going to see across the board, if you just look at the implied runs for an entire slate of baseball, if you eliminate the Coors game, which is always going to have something inflated over just the norm, I would say on average, we're looking at implied run lines way lower than normal for
yes.
Just because there's just so many guys going. And I think when that happens, it might just end up concentrating our plays around a couple games, or, which almost feels sometimes feels worse, is picking and choosing random guys who are facing pitchers that are just slightly worse than the very good guys, if that makes sense. So like,
yeah, and you know, in good platoon situations, stuff like that.
Exactly. So, you know, we didn't mention guys like Suarez and Richards and some of these other mid-tier guys who have been kind of good. Happ is another one that's been fine at times this year. But is there a specific game, even in Coors, I don't know how much we want to incentivize or how much incentivized we are to just pay through the nose for that game. Or is there another sort of stack that you're seeing with some pitchers that maybe just aren't even close to the class of the guys that we mentioned at the top of the podcast?
Well, it's funny because, you know, my process typically when I'm thinking about stacks for big tournaments in particular is to kind of look for the worst pitchers on the slate and then figure out if I can get value from the hitters that are opposing them. The worst pitchers for me on this slate are, in some order, Doug Fister, Andrew Kashner, and Dylan Covey, except for those teams are playing the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, and the Astros. So that's just nice that there are some bad pitchers going, but they're all playing against some of these expensive teams. And throw in the fact, too, that the Coors game doesn't really feature any terrible pitching either. And it's actually pretty difficult to spend up on bats today, I think. Like, I think you probably have to pick a game or two and you know, one of these cheaper games that doesn't feature one of the really, really bad pitchers, like go a tier below them and just kind of hope for the best. Because I don't know, but like in your mind, when all the worst pitchers are facing the really good offenses, meaning that you're going to have to pay a lot more to get them, do you try to prioritize one of those games? Do you go a little bit cheaper on pitching to increase the safety? Or like what's your take on that? Because in that way, it's actually a really weird slate.
No, I don't like it, and this is why a lot of times, you know, at this point in the season, we're not really in cash, at least, unless it's a smaller slate or the stars kind of line up to be perfect. We're just really not playing a ton of guys in the Red Sox, not a ton of guys in the Indians. Even the Astros at times are too expensive, just because they're all, when you're the best offenses in baseball and you've played pretty much the same exact guys since the start of the season, you're all properly priced, and by properly priced, you mean you just really can't get any value on them, even when you're paying probably at least on FanDuel, $1,000 less than you should be paying for sale or something like that.
Although it's funny, yeah, because, well, on FanDuel, it still is broken because on FanDuel, you just get sale and then you get 4 Astros, 2 Red Sox, 2 Blue Jays, and a Dodger or something like that.
Right.
So I mean, you actually can just go for it on FanDuel for cash. But DraftKings, I think, especially if you want to spend up a little bit more on pitching, it gets a little bit more interesting, I think.
I think, well, you know, one team that our system's kind of drawing out for guys on the cheaper side of things is the Blue Jays. They get to face Andrew Kashner. They have an implied run line over 5, one of the few teams that do. It's a good park, especially if they close the roof tonight. It's been going back and forth whether or not they close the roof. You will see, I think a lot of time Vegas comes in assuming the roof is going to be closed, and then if it opens up, it does, in the Rogers Center, it does drop the line, maybe like a half run total or something like that, because like that roof being open does depress some of the power. But guys like Granderson, he's 3,500 on DraftKings. That's just way too cheap if he's hitting leadoff against Kashner. Even like Russell Martin, 2,700. I know these guys have had some of their struggles at times, but Smoke is coming cheap on FanDuel. I think this is a situation where, yeah, he's 3,400. So if you're living in the mid-tier of pricing, which I think you get, Granderson's 2,500 on FanDuel. That's a total joke. He'll be complete chalk. If he's hitting leadoff tonight against Kashner, then I think you see Granderson as one of the higher owned plays of the slate. Not so much with the Smoke and Martin, but he's just simply too cheap. And Kashner, he's got strikeout stuff at times, so he's 8 Ks per 9. He's still walking more than 4 guys. The xFIP is right up around 5. He's just not good. And they feature enough lefty bats in this lineup that I think they can really give him problems. So if there's one team on the cheap that I'm probably going to stack, at least, you know, looking at this at 10 o'clock in the morning Eastern was when we record. This is the probably the team that I think you can get mid-tier and lower value on better than some of the other situations. Because, again, they're just very few situations. Is there another one? I mean, one, do you agree with that? And then two, are there any other ones that I'm maybe missing in terms of guys that are coming a little cheaper?
But, you know, you don't have to talk me into playing the Grandy, man. I'm all over that. The next guy I was going to talk about was Matt Harvey. But really quick before I do that, I just want to say, like, give a nod really quick to how hard it must be to pitch at the major league level. Because the guys we're talking about, it's easy in 2018 to zoom in and think about Andrew Cashner, Alex Cobb, or Matt Harvey. It's kind of like these laughing stock type guys. Phil Hughes, you know, out of the league, basically. All these guys at one point, when we used to follow the prospecting game a lot more seriously, were like pitchers people would dream on having 20-year careers and being borderline Hall of Famers. You know what I mean? Like, it's incredible to see how hard this game is for these guys. And, you know, how just the littlest thing needs to go wrong and your whole career can be derailed. In the case of Matt Harvey, it's just injury. You know, he missed the entire 2014 season. He came back. He was effective in 2015. 2016, he started struggling with injury again, and now the velocity is down to a point where he just can't strike people out. I mean, he seems to have overcome last year's walk issues. He was walking 4.5 batters per nine last year, so that's down to 2.45 per nine, but nothing else has come back. I mean, the Ks are still below 7. The home runs are still up near 2 per nine. It's just a bandbox when he's out there, and he gets the Cardinals today. You know, guys like Matt Carpenter could be another pretty interesting one-off there. And just generally speaking, if you want to go on the slightly cheaper side, if you need to for whatever reason, I think the Cardinals, the first five or so guys in the order, could all be playable tonight.
Yeah, Harvey's incrementally lost velocity every single year since 2013. It's gone down either a half a mile per hour or a full mile per hour every year on lock, and it's death, yep. Right? If you were living on your fastball, if you were living on a 97 mile per hour fastball in 2013, and you've made no other adjustments, which according to his pitch, his pitch breakdown, he is not. He's pitching the exact same amount of exact same percentages, basically.
Of pitches. Yeah, who can blame him, man? He was so good. He was so good.
And he's kind of a head case too. Like, he just got, seems like, not like mental issues, but he just kind of seems like he was kind of an asshole at times when he was with the Mets. Goes to say, he's also got the probably the second best hitter's park in baseball in Cincinnati. Another case to be made for the Cardinals here is that they're just in a power park. Their implied run line is right around 5. I'm with you. The only issue with them is that they are so righty heavy, except for Carpenter all the way down the line. Well, Fowler's a switch hitter, but he's much better against lefties for his career. You're getting the worst side of each one of these guys' platoons. And when it's a guy like Harvey, it just kind of doesn't matter all that much. It's probably the only reason that this run line is not 5.5. Like, if we just switch the handedness of either the batters or the hit or Harvey here, I think you'd see another half run higher. And that's like the only knock, and it's really not even totally a knock. You mentioned Dylan Covey. Covey has actually not been terrible at times. It'd be my only concern. Yeah, he's 8.5 Ks per nine, 3.5 xPIP. He's been actually fine-ish this season.
He generates a lot of ground balls. He also has 4 walks per nine too. Like, he's definitely not great. Like, against a really patient team like the Red Sox, that could absolutely be a spot to target, in my opinion.
Any other teams that you're targeting before we get out of here for the day?
No, I think that about sums it up. I mean, there are an incredible number of games with really low totals that don't feature pitchers that you would want to play. Like, I'm just picturing what the fans must be thinking going to the San Diego-Miami game right now. We got Eric Lauer and Caleb Smith. Normally, guys would be happy to target for big tournament purposes or cash games alike, but Vegas believes that the combined efforts by these teams will not score more than 8 runs just because the offenses are so bad and the pitchers are so bad. And likewise, you got Marco Gonzalez v. Wilmer Font, another just absolute barn burner, another 7.5 total game. So it's like a creepy 7.5 total day, which means a lot of basically sort of average-ish pitchers and really bad offenses against them. And maybe that's it. It's that a lot of the really bad pitchers are facing either the great offenses, which makes them really expensive, or the terrible offenses where it legit doesn't matter who's pitching against them. Like, there's still no fantasy value. So yeah, weird slate overall. That's it'll be interesting to see how things play out tonight.
It's so weird, like, guys like Caleb Smith too, because like, Smith walks the ballpark and he's got an xFIP over 4. He also strikes out 11 per nine. He can't go deep into games at all because he walks too many guys. And these are all, like, it's funny. This is where is a situation too. The only solace I take sometimes in this is, like, I do like playing some of these smaller slates, and there's enough pitching options on each slate that you can kind of section it off. I do still wish that the sites would do 7 p.m. and I say this for all sports, like, would do 7 p.m. only slates at times. Like, I don't know. That's, like, the one they don't seem to ever want to do. They have no problem doing the 2 8-game slates. I don't know if they just think that no one will get anything in on it because the main slate is so popular. But they do it for football. They do 1 p.m. only slates where they've just kind of sectioned it off. I never understand why they won't just do akin to an early only. And because I think that that would offer so much value, and tonight would be one of those situations where I think we would find a lot of value on each one of them, and we just never have the option. So I don't know, maybe one day, but it's just never been something they've been incentivized to do it all. Okay, I'm done lamenting about that. DFSR.com/MLB is the site. Go there for a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, MLB, the aforementioned NFL. When that season comes along, like I said, we're working on our PGA projections. We'll have them up by next season, although I'm going to probably try to post something for the U.S. Open this week as just a shout out to our users. That will probably be premium content, but I will we'll get some way to at least display those numbers, because I know the U.S. Open is such a big one, and we'll also do a PGA podcast sometime during the week to talk about one of the majors. All right, buddy, enjoy your Friday and your weekend, and I will talk to you again next week.
Peace.